Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, February 11, 2016. An opposition lawmaker say IDPs in Mundri are fleeing because of renewed fighting.
And we urge all the government institutions to abide by the entirety of the peace agreement in letter and in spirit so that together we end the suffering of our people.
And a local official say Yambi residents are slowly returning home now that relative calm has returned to that area.
Some people are coming back, others have decided to stay where they ran to because the situation is not all that guaranteed.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. One of the newly appointed SPLM-IO lawmakers from the former Western Equatoria state says internally displaced persons in Mundri are fleeing their homes due to fighting between SPLM-IO and government forces. So far, there are no death or casualty reports. VOA fellow Tito Justin has this report from Washington.
SPLM-IO MP Agri Esbon Idris says the latest wave of fighting started after groups of armed men were reportedly ordered by government authorities to sabotage the process of distributing aid to displaced persons in the area. Esbon says SPLM-IO forces began to fight government forces because they were impeding humanitarian access to displaced persons. The number of the displaced people in the area is unknown. Esbon says sending armed men to disrupt the distribution of aid in conflict zone is unacceptable according to terms of the peace deal.
My message is that our forces will continue to abide by the compromise peace agreement, and we urge all the government institutions to abide by the entirety of the peace agreement in letter and in spirit so that together we end the suffering of our people.
Amadi State Governor Joseph Ngele declined to comment on this latest fighting. Governor Ngele says he is in Juba and has no information about what's going in his state. Animis says they did not receive any updated reports of fighting in the area. Last year, local leaders of Protestants and Catholic churches created a new peace initiative between government and Arrow Boys to end fighting in the area. But last December, the Arrow Boys fighting, the government declined to sign the permanent peace deal. Esbon says no other negotiations are needed to end fighting in the area, only a commitment to IGAD brokered peace deal.
There is no any other local agreement you make over that can supersede the bigger agreement. Our argument all this time with all the local authorities, with the churches, with whoever is there, we are telling them, please let us all abide by the compromise peace agreement, which spells the cessation of hostilities, the ceasefire, and all the forces should remain in their place and avoid provocative acts.
The fighting in Western Equatoria State started in April last year after cattle keepers from the neighboring states refused to abide by President Kiir's order to leave local farmers' land and return home. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Washington.
And residents of Yambio, capital of the newly created Budue State, say despite deadly clashes that occurred over last month, life is beginning to return to normal. Hundreds of residents have returned to their homes and are now asking the government to reach a peaceful settlement with local vigilante group known as the Arrow Boys. For VOA News, Gift Friday reports from Juba.
Gibson Arona, a resident of Naduru area, which was badly affected by the recent fighting in Yambio, says, like others, he has come home, but not everyone is returning.
Some people are coming back, others have decided to stay where they ran to because the situation is not all that guaranteed. Some of us are staying there, some of us are just on and off. That's how people are living.
Arona says life is difficult for most returnees, partly because during the clashes, almost all their property was either stolen or burned down. He says a major challenge he and other returnees face is lack of food, since villagers were unable to harvest their crops during the clashes. Arona is calling on authorities to restore peace and stability in South Sudan, in Yambio in particular.
We need peace now. Peace must come for the people of South Sudan, because peace is the source of everything that we are not able to get right now.
Flora Gume fled from Kuzey residential area in Yambio to Nagori during recent fighting between Aero Boys and the government forces. She says at least people can now sleep in Yambio without hearing the sound of gunfire. Gume says she and other villagers returned to their homes after county authorities asked them to come back.
We had a call of the Honorable Commissioner of Yambio County and the Honorable of Yambio Municipality. They called on for people to flee their places, of which are most among them. And then we had to come back to our various places.
Gume says life is slowly getting back to normal, but she says prices of commodities in the market have skyrocketed. John Peter, a resident of Masia, says, unlike in the past few weeks, he sees children going to school and people going about their businesses in Yambio town. Peter called on the government to listen to the people.
Think about the citizens. Because it's like they only value themselves, they don't think about the citizens of South Sudan. Because every day people are running day and night.
Yambio County Commissioner Hussein Enoka confirms that Kam has returned to the town.
Because, you know, Yambio is now becoming a big city. When there is a big city and criminals are around, but he used to tackle it with the government. And inshallah, within a short time, then everything will be okay.
Enoka says the youth of Masia last week arrested 3 suspected thugs and handed them over to the police. He says state officials are ready to sign a final peace deal with the local branch of the Aero Boys. Enoka says after a peace deal is reached, people will need to reconcile with one another.
Yambio County needs the program of healing and reconciliation. With this, I'm calling upon all the NGOs, the human rights, we've got maybe programs of healing and reconciliation. They have to come in order to clear away the trauma.
Western Equatoria State Police Commissioner, Major General Albino Atao Mariano, says there is relative peace in the state headquarters over the past couple of weeks. Mariano says the 3 suspected thugs handed over by local youth are facing charges and will be taken to court.
This is my message to the youth and to the people. Let them be in touch with the police to arrest the criminals.
Mariano says police will do their job, protecting the lives and property of the people in Yambio and the surrounding area. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
The states of Western Beach, Eastern Beach and Jonglei, all part of the former Jonglei state, have distributed movable government assets and liabilities among themselves. They say the distribution was successful, completed in a peaceful way, but at least one civil servant charges a proper procedure was not followed. Jacob Achek compiled this report for VOA from Juba.
Under the controversial order of the President Salva Kiir, former Jonglei state was divided into 4 new estates: Western Bia, Eastern Bia, Jonglei, and Buma. This week, officials of the new state divided government assets. Mawud Achek Gwarak, Secretary General of the new Jonglei state, says everything was divided fairly.
Tables, chairs, computers, generators, freezers, televisions, whatever that belonged to the government, that was purchased through the government's money. We have given it out. And the formula was very easy. All the assets were distributed equally among the 3 states.
Gwarak says Buma estate, which used to be called the Greater Pibora Administration, did not receive any assets aside from one vehicle that belonged to the former governor of Jonglei estate, who hailed from Greater Pibor. He says that because Buma was being run by an independent administration before President Kiir split the country 10 states into 28. Gwarak says the new estate must jointly repay a debt of 9 million South Sudanese pound, which the former Jonglei state has accrued. Western Bia State Secretary General Bashir Deng says unused cash amount to 1.5 million South Sudanese pound was divided according to state populations.
More Jonglei has the lion's share because of the population it has, followed by Eastern Bia. And Western Bia were the least.
Gwarak says civil servants of former Jonglei estates were redeployed to the new estates.
If you come from Twiji, then automatically you belong to Jonglei estate. If you come to Uroor, then automatically you belong to Eastern Bia. If you come from Punjab, then you belong to Western Bia. Legally, the way workforce is split whenever there is a division in administrative units, if that the last pay certificate of each employee should be transferred to that mother unit. But what happened in Dubai is not that way.
David Nyengood, acting director in the Jonglei State Ministry of Cooperative and Rural Development, says proper procedures was not followed in the redistribution process.
They come to the Ministry of Cooperative and Rural Development. That is the past ministry which was studying the distribution of this asset of the Jonglei estate. The time they arrived to the ministry, they were just come in the midday, the time people were going for the line, people were deciding the ministry. With our document, and they come say that we want to take asset in the ministry. That is not fair. My new one just talked, without document, you cannot take this asset in the ministry. Until they are calling Secretary General, and Secretary General told me, you just give, and I will prepare the document.
Nyengood says his ministry released their asset after the Jonglei State Secretary General told them to do so, even though the ministry received no written request for the assets. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
The U.S. says it is disappointed that Russia blocked U.N. Security Council action to expand sanctions against Sudan. Russia's decision comes after the U.N.'s Sudan Sanctions Committee panel of experts linked the trafficking of gold and other minerals to violence and instability in Darfur. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
While welcoming the resolution to extend the mandate of the UN's Sudan Sanctions Panel of Experts, calling it a technical rollover, Ambassador Samantha Power, U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations, also criticized the Council's inability to address the role that gold plays in Sudan. After losing major oil revenues to South Sudan when it became a country in 2011, gold has become a large source of revenue for Sudan. But Power says Sudan's gold mining involves illegal activity.
We are particularly concerned that the Council was unable to address the role of illicit trafficking in natural resources in fueling conflict. The nexus between gold trafficking and armed groups, as outlined by the panel of experts, is very well known. This Council has addressed without controversy the role of gold and natural resources in other conflicts.
Sanctions against Sudan have been in place for 12 years, and an arms embargo has been in place for 11 years. The UN formed a panel of experts to report on the humanitarian violations in Darfur. Power says the panel exposed numerous and recurring violations of humanitarian and human rights laws.
And yet when they do, a member of this council blocks the report from being published because its findings are so disturbing. Today's resolution is a technical rollover. Not because the panel of experts did not provide findings on how to respond better to the situation.
A 2015 report by the Washington-based NGO, The Enough Project, says Sudan has more than 1,000 tons of gold reserves scattered across the country, including Darfur, South Kordofan, and the Blue Nile, all of which are conflict areas. That same report says Sudan is the 12th largest gold producer in the world and the third in Africa. Many organizations, including the Enough Project, have pressured the UN to draft legislation that would restrict trade with Sudan. Power says it's time that happens.
Today, the Council should have built upon the excellent international and regional initiatives underway in this field to tackle this problem in the Sudan context. But because of the panel's reporting on this issue, a panel's report may never become public.
According to the Enough Project, the UN panel of experts recommended in their unpublished report that more sanctions be imposed on Sudan because gold and the mining of natural resources fuel the conflict in Darfur. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a farmer in Kajokeji County say he has to close operations because of economic hardships. That story is coming right after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Do you think it's important to know how to swim?
It's very important, of course, because
And for example, for our case here, maybe sometime you can be forced to go to the river. And if you cannot swim, you can just die there. But if possible, you know how to swim, you can just rescue your life. That is why it is very important.
Very much important, because as far as I know, it reduces weight and it's not good to be so fat.
Yeah, it's important because that person is makes physicals. That person is, okay, it even reduces on the body weakness. Like even these diseases, because when you swim, at least you are physically fit.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Health officials in Abyei are reporting dozens of suspected cases of measles in the area, and they are suspecting more will be confirmed. The officials say they will launch a mass immunization campaign this weekend targeting thousands of children under the age of 15. Dimos Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Wau.
The number of suspected measles cases jumped to 40, according to health officials. Dr. Yusuf Lel Ayom, Abyei Health Ministry Manager for Expanded Program on Immunization, says most of the measles cases are being handled at the French medical charity MSF's hospital in Abyei.
When we make our vision, when we make awareness, everyone to come to hospital, and they are now in the hospital. And then people are still coming from their villages now.
A joint medical team of WHO, UNICEF, and local health workers have formed a rapid response effort to prevent the disease from spreading. Ayom says the rapid response will target tens of thousands of children from local areas during 5 days of vaccination that will begin on Saturday.
The medicals we have, Ajakwaj and Agog, which is Goljok, and plus place called Acholkow. We target 35,000 and 700. And 31 children from 6 months to 15 years.
Albino Mayor, Abyei Administrative Area Officer, says vaccinators will take advantage of the dry season to reach all villages during the campaign. He says most of the people with measles fled fighting in South Sudan's Unity State over the last 2 years.
The new cases, these are not people of Abyei. These are people coming from the Unity State. The new cases, which has brought in the problem of measles, and that people in Abyei, they are okay. But since there are cases of that type, they have to give the vaccines to all the children.
Mayor says they are running low of drugs that treat measles in Abyei's main hospital. He hopes the supplies of vaccine arrive in time from World Health Organization.
The few drugs which we have, they are getting out of stock, but we have some in the stores, and with this system, we are distributing them to the hospitals and then to the primary health care centers.
WHO and government reports indicate there were 5 confirmed outbreaks of measles in 2015 in Unity Estates, Bentiu, Jongole Estates, Duk, Lakes Estate, Wulu, and Central Equatoria Estates, Yei and Juba. Conflict, displacement, and lack of access to health care has frustrated efforts to vaccinate people in remote parts of South Sudan. Only 6 out of South Sudan's 79 counties had the requisite minimum 80% measles vaccination coverage, and 55 counties had less than 60% coverage. Most of them were in the Greater Upper Nile area. Health officials say an estimated 400,000 children under age 5 remain at risk of contracting measles in Unity, Upper Nile, and Jongole. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
Two South Sudanese economists say the country needs to review its economic policies. Speaking at a public lecture today organized by the SAD Institute, economists warn that unless action is taken, soon South Sudan's economy will face more serious problems. Arik David Reng, who works for the SAD Institute, presented a paper entitled Understanding Exchange Rate Regime in South Sudan. Arik says the devaluation of the local currency was long overdue, but he says the government implemented it at the wrong time.
These complementary reform include monetary and fiscal policies of the country, how much money is circulating in the system, so they should not print too much money because that's not a good thing. It leads to devaluation or more devaluation and inflation. The other thing is the fiscal side of things. When you do that, then basically the government have been also financing that huge expenditure by way of deficit, or what is called deficit finance. And so that is not a good thing as well.
Last year, the government abandoned the official exchange rate of $1 to 2.9 South Sudanese pounds and floated the local currency by exchanging it at $1 to 18.5 South Sudanese pounds, devaluating the South Sudanese currency by 84%. Since the devaluation, the prices of goods and services skyrocketed. Rang says the economy will face many challenges in the future.
We really want it to work and deliver the result that it was intended to do, then you need this other reform. Otherwise, what you just do will be artificial, so it will not serve the purpose. And you will incur costs because you are trying to defend it, because a managed flood, you still need to defend it just like a fixed flood with dollars. The dollars is what you don't have, and the dollars are what you are trying to pump into the market, and they are not appearing in the market. That's why you need this other reform. Without this other reform, well, the policy will not work.
Economist Kenyi Spencer agrees. He says the government should take proactive measures to address the several loopholes in the country's economy.
The system is not working is because the bidding process by the commercial bank has not been done in good faith. Had it to be done in good faith, so that the money, however much, it was 56 point something million that have gone to the grey market. If that 56 was to be used rightly and really sold to the public in the right way, the way many countries do through their commercial banks or forexes, I think by now we'd be talking differently.
Spencer also says urgent economic reforms should be implemented to avoid continuing high food prices.
The reserve that we say should be in place were not in place. One of them is the strategic food reserve. Should happen. It's not a matter of saying we assign one business person to bring or two business people to bring the food. These are business people. They will definitely charge the same price which has been in the market or even according to the market. But what we want now, government itself, to go into business by importing the food.
Rang says countries like Ghana, Mozambique and Uganda took bold decisions in the 1980s and devalued their currencies to improve their economies. He says those countries are now managing exports and at the same time enjoying economic growth. He says South Sudan can learn lessons from these countries and recover from post-war challenges. Waki Simon Wudu prepared that report from Juba. The fall in the value of the South Sudanese pound has not only caused a hardship and rise in food prices, but also forced several businesses to close. The Porong Mixed Farm in Kajukeji County of the newly created Yei State closed its business. The farm's management says it has halted its poultry section, leaving scores of former employees jobless. Waki Simon Wudu visited the farm recently and now files this report from Juba.
Julius Tablet, director of the Porongo Mixed Farm, walks to the farm to confer with his staff. His house is a few meters from the farm where his cattle, goats and sheep graze. Every morning he meets with his workers to ensure they are inspecting the cattle and the goats and prepares to take them for feeding. Tablet makes sure his workers first spray the animals before taking them to graze. The animals are driven into a spray race, which is a small mechanized room which protects the animals against the infections spread by pests. Established back in 2010, the farm has 300 goats, 60 sheep and 80 cows, comprised of both local animals and hybrids. The farm has also 10-acre banana plantation, 10-acre tree plantation, a 3-acre plantation of citrus, mangoes and avocado fruits, as well as fields of maize, sorghum, cassava and beans. Tablet says the farm was created to boost the employment opportunities and food production, but since the outbreak of the violence in late 2013 and the subsequent decline in the value of the South Sudanese pounds, Tablet says the farm started to face challenges. He says, for example, buying feeds for chicken and pigs fertilizers became expensive.
We import most of what we use on the farm from the neighboring countries. That is, we talk of fertilizers, or we talk of pesticides, or we talk of veterinary medicines. Now, with the recent devaluation of the currency, it has made it very expensive to import anything from outside this country. In the past, for instance, things were not as expensive as now. But now, certain items have tripled, others have doubled, others have even quadrupled. So that one has really affected us very negatively.
In addition, Table says he had to cut the number of employees from 15 to 7 because of the reduction in output.
We have had to close down two important enterprises on the farm, for instance. That is piggery and poultry. Reasons? Because we could not cope up with the importation of most of the inputs that we needed to run these enterprises.
Nurses Rasool began working at Prongomixi Farm in 2010 as a manager. He earns 600 South Sudanese pounds a month, which he says it has now helped him build a house and take care of his family. He wakes up early in the morning and ensures that milking of the cows takes place, that all the cattle, goats and sheep are taken to the booths for feeding, and that every head of each department does their job. He worries about the problems facing the farm.
The government is a challenge here. If they could resolve their issues, because the issue is now the money has gone down, could not sustain us, most of us. Those are the challenges. And also workers, sometimes getting workers is not easy.
The challenges facing Prongomixi Farm are typical of the challenges facing many other South Sudanese farms.
First, I must say, in the past, the economy was encouraging imports. It was making imports cheap, but it was also hurting production. We were not producing for ourselves because the cost of exports were discouraged in a way. So it was making imports cheap, but exports were expensive. Today, with the official devaluation now, it means that importing any commodity from outside has become expensive.
Table says he thinks the two warring parties in South Sudan's conflict should speed up all efforts to restore peace and stability in the country in order to boost the production and other sectors of the economy. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
From Juba, we go back to the studio here to Carol Van Damme with a recap of today's top stories.
Thanks, John. A new SPLM-IO MP says internally displaced persons in Mundri's Bari area of Amadi State are fleeing the area because of fresh fighting between opposition and government forces. There's been no casualty reports. SPLM-IO MP Agri Esban Idri says the latest wave of fighting started over groups of armed men who were ordered by government authorities to sabotage the distribution of aid to displaced residents. Residents of Yambio, the capital of the newly created Budwe state, say despite deadly clashes over the past month there, life is getting back to normal. Hundreds of residents have returned to their homes. And finally, the state of Western Bay, Eastern Bay, and Djongolay, all part of the former Djongolay state, have distributed movable government assets between them among themselves. Government officials from all three states say distribution was successfully completed. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Survival by Bob Marley. Been listening to Bob Marley with that classic song, Survival. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your cars and homes. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Yes, we're the survivors like Daniel.